Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, this is Jessica Chotin
and Stacey Muncher.
And
John Andres.
And we are going to turn the page. And we have another special guest here today. John, would you like to tell us about your special companion here?
Yeah, I brought my little friend R2AE. She's a R2 astromech droid. She's from Star Wars. She's kind of like R2's girlfriend.
She even has a little heart.
Yep. I love it.
It's so cool. So, could you tell me a little bit about your group and what you do?
Okay. Well, with R2 Builders, we're worldwide. What we do basically is we're a nonprofit group who build R2D2s or similar R2 units for charity. We go around and do charity events, or we build them just for ourselves to have fun. That's pretty much it.
That's awesome. I have to tell you right now, I am just absolutely floored at, I almost wish we had a video in here because the craftsmanship of this, this droid unit is absolutely beautiful. So tell me a little bit about her name. You were telling us before.
My first one I built, I named R2E1. And it was basically to get a grasp on what I wanted to do and see where I wanted to go with it. And then I decided to build a second one, and my wife kind of, little hesitation. But I said, well, let's do it together, and I'll give you free rein. You can go out and pick a color, which she liked. We went to Walmart, and she picked out watermelon. So I went with it, and so I named it after her. So it's R2AE, which is after Anne-Marie Andres.
Oh, that's really nice.
So,
I like the watermelon. I'm just obsessing because pink's my favorite color, and I'm like, you're so beautiful.
It's different. We also have another pink droid in the group, which the 501 use, and that's R2KT. And Katie's been in a bunch of the movies, and it was for a little girl. One of the guys from 501, his little girl was dying of brain cancer.
Oh.
And one of the things she asked for was a pink R2. So the R2 group guys got together, donated parts, and built it for her. And then she's been redone a couple of times, and now she travels the world. And like I said, she's been on a couple of movies now.
That's a really just, I don't, it's, I mean, it's sad, and it's
absolutely
beautiful. And yeah. I have to, so one question I have to ask, and then I just wanted to talk a little bit about the 501st and you guys and the Empire Lightsaber Guild and how it all comes together.
Saber Guild.
Yes.
They don't like that.
Ah, well, then I apologize. The Empire Saber Guild. But first, so Star Wars is, I mean, what would you say, Stacey?
Oh, I'm like thinking of like one word to just, I'm like there's gigantic, galactic, like
iconic.
Huge, iconic.
Iconic, and it really has endured decades.
Absolutely.
And decades,
yeah.
And it continues to stay relevant.
It does.
Oh, yeah.
I like how it connects like a bunch of people in different generations. Like
absolutely.
I mean, I will fully admit I'm a latecomer to Star Wars. I used to just see clips of the movies whenever it was on, and
right.
I never watched like a full movie. And then when this new latest trilogy came out, I was like, all right, I'm going to binge watch everything. Like, we're taking everything from the library.
Well, I have to admit, my wife has not seen all of the movies. I have my kids. Most of my kids have seen most of them, but my wife has never really sat down. My wife is more of a murder mystery. She likes... Oh, now I just forgot the name of it. Murder, She Wrote.
Okay, so. Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool though, because it like just talking to even patrons at the library, like seeing little kids and children fall in love with it.
Absolutely.
And then you have like parents, grandparents.
Well, the thing I like the most is like a lot of times you see little kids and they're happy to see it. They smile and they come up, they hug it. but it's the older generation. The guys are in their 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. They walk up and you just see them smiling from ear to ear, and you know you've made a connection. That's really what makes it worth it, all those smiles.
That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I'm raising my children with Star Wars. I have twin boys, and since they were 2 months old, there were these board books, these Star Wars board books, and I bought them, and I would sit them in my lap, and this is really embarrassing, but there's a video that I have that my friends have seen. I sing them the story of Star Wars, because each page in the book is the story with felt characters and one word per page. So I kind of fill in my own blanks.
Okay. Okay.
Well. But the coolest thing is that the first time we took them to an event with the Saber Guild,
right,
they start off playing the Star Wars theme.
Right.
And immediately they said, Star Wars, and right. They were not even two yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that is an iconic song. You hear that and you know that's mm-hmm. Star Wars.
So talk a little bit about, so you guys do this for charity, and as do the 501st.
Yes. And the Saber Guild does as well. I do a lot of events right now with Saber Guild. They're a great bunch of people.
Yeah, they really are.
The R2 guys tend to donate to St. Jude's. Mm-hmm. I believe the Saber
That's
Guild.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Saber Guild, I believe, is St. Joseph's community hospital. I'm not positive on that exactly. 501, I'm not sure. I think they do a lot of Make-A-Wish.
They do. They are absolutely amazing. So all of these groups, just to kind of fill listeners in, they're all different Star Wars, either costuming Correct. Groups or I know the Saber Guild is allowed to do a little bit of play acting
yes.
and a little bit of combat.
Correct.
With custom-made lightsabers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And they do Jedi yes. and Sith.
Sith, yes, yes. And they have an incredible, Kylo Ren. He really...
Oh, my God. Isn't he awesome?
He kills it. He's really just great.
He terrified my friends when we do... for a work-related committee we're on, we did the Star Wars movies as like an event because everyone loves it and it's all family-friendly. And they were there... Friends were like, oh my God, it's really him.
Yeah. I mean, that guy.
And I'm like, yeah.
Oh, he is fantastic in that
part.
He's
great.
Like, isn't like one of your sons obsessed with him?
One of my sons thinks he's the best thing in the world. One of my sons is definitely dark side. Every time he sees the red lightsabers, his eyes light
Some
up.
Some of them are like that, you know?
they're definitely going to be opposing forces of the force. So talk a little bit about the work you do with the Maker Faires.
Maker Faire, we show up and we do pretty much what we're doing here. And what we're going to be doing tonight is talking about the droid, how we build them, how long they've been in basically service, as I put it. And then we try to bring people to the group if you want to build your own and give you instructions and help you out in any way, shape, or form to do what you need to do to get it done for yourself.
How did you find the group?
I was actually on eBay. I was out of work, and I was searching eBay, and I found a blank dome, and I said, oh, man, that would be really cool. And so I went ahead and bought it. I figured one way or another, I'm going to do it. And I started doing research, and I found the R2 builders, and they have all the blueprints. They have guys that, again, guys will help you and work with you.
Wow.
And it just kind of blew up from there, little by little by little. I got my dome done. I was literally on the funny thing. I was on the soccer field with my daughter with sandpaper, rubbing the dome, sanding the dome down to try to get it smooth. And everybody was like looking at me funny, like, what the heck could this be? And then once you finally tell them, oh, it's for R2-D2, oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Why? You know what? How come you're doing that?
Yeah.
It is a lot of fun. I enjoy doing it, though. I've always been a little bit with my hands. So it was the next step for me.
That's really cool. So, like, any level can come in. Like, I don't know how to read blueprints or any of that. And, like, I can make one.
It's pretty simple. Even if you don't want to read blueprints and you want to buy parts, the group does do part runs.
Oh, wow.
Like, I originally started with plastic skins on her. Mm-hmm. But getting her in and out of the car and the kids, you know, poking and prodding, the skins get broken. So I went ahead and bought a set of aluminum skins. And it's basically you take a little hacksaw blade, cut the pieces out, glue them, and put it on the droid. It was real nice and easy.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm like ready to be like, I'm gonna make one.
Well,
I don't have room in my apartment.
But even if you want to do it out of plastic styrene, there's plans for that, and it's really easy. You just ruler a knife.
I really want one.
I know, me too. So you have eight. Excuse me, R2AE. You have R2KT.
Right.
And you have an R2D2.
Correct. There are all kinds of R2 units. There's a Q5 and R4s, and there's different levels. There's even R7s now.
Wow.
It's just that the next, it's like, Volkswagen and Chevy. They're all cars, but they're a different brand of car. Yeah.
So have you ever experimented with maybe BB-8 or C-3PO?
I don't do that. There are guys in the R2 group who do that.
Right,
the 3D printing these days is huge. A lot of the guys are doing that, and they're really successful with it. I don't really tinker too much with the 3D printing. I do mainly resin and plastic, wood, things like that. But yeah, the BB-8s, there's some guys that really, intricate, unbelievably intricate with it. It's amazing.
That's so very cool. So what kind of 3D printers do people usually use?
You know what? I really don't know. Unfortunately, Scott's not here. Scott, he does the 3D printing for us right now. He's more into it than I am. I know there's one guy in the group, Michael Bradley, I think his last name is. He just actually printed himself a full-size dome. He has a printing table that's big enough to do that.
See, we have MakerBots upstairs,
correct.
Though I don't know. I think we could probably do mini domes, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think there's a big enough platform to make.
Not at the moment.
You never know.
Well, some of the guys actually do like half size. There's a picture from the last celebration of a guy who has three R2 units in his back seat. And one looks like a Minion, one looks like R2-D2, and then I forget what the other one looked like. But they were like half size, and they had him driving around Celebration the whole time.
That's great.
It was cool.
I've
even seen an R2 Batman, which I thought
was
cool.
Oh my God, my friend would be obsessed with that.
I think that this is just so cool, and we're so happy to have you here at the library. Star Wars events always
pull the people in,
they cheer people up, and the fact that libraries are starting to incorporate maker spaces and just maker programs in general, I think one of the things that I love about Star Wars as a librarian is from, I guess, a narrative aspect, it's got so much mythology and so much love and story.
Yeah. It's great. I like that, but I also like that you can appreciate it across all types of media. We have books on it from, kids to adult. We have the movies. And then even with the makerspaces, if you want to make your own, little lightsaber, someone make me that, please. Thanks. I'm not good with the printer. I learned, once how to change a film, and then I'm like, never again. What is this?
Well, they also have the resin 3D printings, too, right?
Yeah, some libraries do. We just have the plastic, I believe.
But
you would know more than I do.
That's what we have, and it's been good for our projects. I think actually it's kind of funny because when we had SciCon here in September of 2018. This is 2018. 2017. One of our younger winners for the cosplay contest was a Kylo Ren who 3D printed a handheld version of Darth Vader's melted mask at our 3D printer.
That's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was really impressed, and he drew the attention of the Saber Guild's Kylo, who made brooding friends with him.
Okay.
Brooding friends. No, that's great to use. I mean, for us, we could help with, any of the costumes or something like that. But they make so much. We were talking when we first got the training of, people make houses out of 3D printers.
They are actually starting to.
3D printers. I'm like, what?
They have cheap housing that they started in Africa, I believe. Yeah, it was, yeah. Doing 3D printing with cement.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to do it out here.
Yeah, it's really just kind of crazy, you know, how things move along, but also how things endure, like Star Wars, how you can marry the new technology to old technology. I'm doing air quotes here.
I was gonna be like, she's air quoting.
So before we head into, because we're about to do a little presentation here, and have some people here at the library to take a look at R2AE, can she come forward and maybe make some noise into our microphone?
Well, let's see. So how you doing today, R2? Oh, that's good to hear. You happy to be here? Oh, okay. That's good. You want to do some dancing or anything today? Yeah, a little cantina's music.
Oh my God, this is great.
Okay, maybe later? All right.
Well, thank you so much for coming, R2AE. And thank you, John Endres from the Long Island R2 Builders.
Nice.
Thank you for having me.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page. So this is Jessica Chotin, and I am here with...
My name is Scott Kraft, and I'm also with the R2-D2 Builders Group.
So this is part two of our interview with your group. We just interviewed John, who did a great demonstration with his R2AE unit. So would you like to tell me, Scott, a little bit about your process in R2 building?
Sure. I'm not nearly as far along as John is. I have built some parts of my droid. I built the frame, and I've started on building. I'm actually building my own dome, unlike John. Mine's going to be an R4 dome. I decided to go that route just because I could probably build it myself, I thought. And anytime you think something's going to be easy, you always think, oh, this will be easy to build. It doesn't really turn out that way, but I'm still having fun building it. It's a great group, and I'm having a lot of fun learning things along the way.
So how did you get into R2 building?
Well, I've been watching Star Wars probably since before I could walk and talk, so I've always wanted my own R2-D2, and...
Who doesn't? Yeah. I mean, come on.
And I kind of knew about the R2 Builders Club, it started maybe 15, maybe more years ago. I kind of knew about it back then. I didn't really think it was something that I could do, but then I discovered the Long Island Makerspace, which is not far from my house, where we have access to all kinds of neat tools, like a laser cutter, which I use a lot to cut parts. But people can really use any kind of hand tools they even have. A lot of people do spend time cutting things at home. But once I realized that what that laser cutter could do, I decided that this was the project for me.
So you said you have been watching Star Wars since you were...
Since probably... I'm of the early 80s generation, plus I had older brothers who were, you know, just the right age to the target demographic when those movies hit, the original Star Wars movies. So I kind of grew up that way, and I was more of the sci-fi fan. My brothers kind of grew out of it, but it sort of always stuck with me.
So, I think I had mentioned before when we were talking in the program, but I'll mention it for the listeners. I saw... Empire Strikes Back. No, it was Return of the Jedi. Sorry, Return of the Jedi in a drive-in theater in Westbury, and that was my first exposure to Star Wars. And man, that was crazy because I loved it.
Yeah. So I was born in '82, so I was probably too young to see it in the theaters. But that very first network broadcast, my parents had a very early VHS VCR, and I wore that tape out. I remember all the old commercials that were on the tape with it.
Yeah. So I was born in 79, so I guess I just got that tail end.
Yeah.
And it was easier for my parents to take me to drive-in theaters because, you know, taking a little kid to a movie theater isn't necessarily the most... You're not really going to get a lot for your money,
sure,
depending on how old they are, because, you know, they do a lot of dancing around,
yep,
having... Kids myself, I can tell you that. But I just remember I was there just clutching my pillow, watching every minute of it, and I loved it. And I had giant Tinker Toys. I used to make lightsabers out of them and X-Wing fighters. So it's really just so special to me to see that Star Wars just continues to go on.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the same boat. I feel the same way, and I have a daughter as well. I'm trying to get her into it. She got really into the Star Wars Rebels show. Kind of came out just when she sort of started to be able to more concentrate and watch a whole half hour show, and always wanted to know what was going to happen next.
They've done some really fun things with expanding the universe for all ages. Have you seen any of the Lego Star Wars TV shows?
I did. I love how they're kind of tongue in cheek and
very so
funny.
Yeah.
And self-referential. It's really great.
I think my favorite, there's one where they do episode one in like 5 minutes. And every time somebody comes up to Lego Anakin and talks about how he's going to be a great Jedi, one day a character comes out in the background and goes, "Red flags, red flags," which I thought was, again, just really very funny. I know episode one is generally not everybody's favorite.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So as a Star Wars fan and as a librarian, I had mentioned in the earlier interview that one of the things I love is just the story and the narrative and the use of mythology. What is it that draws you into Star Wars and keeps you there?
Oh, I think it's the same thing that probably draws anyone in. It's kind of the universal story. I'm kind of a geek as far as, you know, once I get into something, I like to know everything about it. So I kind of, you know, went back and, you know, sort of educated myself about how this story came to be. And it's no accident that George Lucas kind of followed along with the universal myth, if you know who Joseph Campbell is.
Yeah, he was the hero with a thousand faces.
Yeah, yeah. So he was actually befriended him, and it's no surprise that the story very much follows along with that sort of universal story that they find in so many cultures. And there's just common elements across so many cultures, which I think is why it's very appealing to a lot of people.
Now, another thing that I had found out about Star Wars later on was that George Lucas was also influenced by Akira Kurosawa?
Yeah, The Hidden Fortress.
The Hidden Fortress, right, which is Kurosawa is, I mean, he's one of the most prolific Japanese directors.
Sure. Yeah, and if you watch that movie, there are two characters in the beginning who kind of play the comic foils.
And aren't they wandering through, was it a desert? It's been a while
Something
since
like
I've
that.
Seen it.
But even if you look at the transitions and the wipes that they do, they're
classic.
Taking straight from that and other Kurosawa films.
So another thing, as a Star Wars fan, and I wanted to see, you know, if you'd heard this too, that he was also influenced by a lot of pulp?
He obviously grew up when he did, and I guess the space race sort of influenced the culture, and Flash Gordon kind of came out of that era. So, and Indiana Jones as well sort of grew out of, was inspired by that type of storytelling.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I find it to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, did you collect any Star Wars toys?
I definitely did, and I still do, admittedly. So as I said, I'm the youngest child, so they were sort of, my brothers weren't too, they didn't say, you know, don't play with these are my toys. It's kind of, you know, communal toys, but, eventually some of them sort of meandered their way to my house now that we're grown up and I'm more of the sci-fi fan, but I definitely, still am into collecting, and my daughter is too.
So what other fandoms interests you?
I've always been a very, sci-fi person, although it's interesting to find out the things that I'm not into, because in my whole group of friends, like, I'm not that into comic books, which will surprise some people.
Right.
That I really haven't read that many comic books, so I don't really know that much about them. But definitely Star Trek was something I got into, but I actually got into that when I was maybe older, like probably I was around 10 years old, because my mother was a huge Star Trek fan. She grew up, she was also the youngest child, so she didn't get to decide what was on TV. Her brothers did when they got to watch TV. So she became a Star Trek fan from watching Star Trek with her brothers, and then I kind of said one day, passing by the TV, instead of ignoring what my parents were doing, I said, "Oh, what's this?" And so Star Trek is something else I got into, and other science fiction things here along the way.
So Star Trek and Star Wars, a lot of times they're kind of billed as having contention against one another. Do you think that they can exist in the same?
Yeah, I think they can. I think they're doing different things, really.
Yeah.
One's telling a story from beginning to end. You know, Star Wars is a saga.
Yeah.
It's telling this sort of struggle between good and evil and about a family, you know, and their progression. Whereas Star Trek, they're kind of doing they've often been called morality plays, where a single episode will often deal with a single issue that's sort of representative of bigger themes.
I mean, they do that really, really well. The Next Generation, there's that episode, is it Darmok?
Oh, yeah, the one where they have, like, the language barrier, and they have trouble communicating, and eventually they figure out that they're speaking in metaphors.
Right, the alien race that, was it Picard, I think, he landed on their planet, he finds that they only communicate through...
Yeah, this kind of metaphorical language, so their universal translators don't really work the way they're supposed to.
And I think the analogy that was used on the show was, like, if somebody was to say Juliet on the balcony, but, you know, you don't know who Juliet is and why she's on the balcony, you wouldn't understand the context.
You have to understand their culture.
And Picard kind of had to do that really quickly. It was just such a beautiful episode.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of very short little stories. You get these little snippets, especially with the original series, where they kind of had free rein to go into, you know, nothing was... considered absurd at that point, and they could do all kinds of different things.
So just going back to Star Wars and Star Trek and collecting, I recently found out that the company who sold Star Trek toys and bought it, I think the rights for $5,000, made tons of money marketing. Wow. Because Star Trek toys, before this company came out, and I can't remember the name of the company off the top of my head, they had, like, very little to do with Star Trek. They just repurposed army men.
Yeah, they were kind of strange, bizarre toys. They didn't really, you know, they would repurpose other things, and they didn't had barely anything to do with the show.
So the company, they came out with Star Trek toys, and they were really well made. And then when the license came around for Star Wars, they were just like, nope, not going to do it. No interest.
They thought they'd learned their lesson, but George Lucas had a different lesson to teach, because he was very on board with the marketing and the merchandising, and he kind of kept that in his contract about retaining a certain amount of the merchandising rights and the profits from it. So it was a very smart move.
Yeah, I believe there's a show called The Toys That Made Us?
Yeah, I think I've seen
something,
it.
On Netflix. So that was very interesting for me. As soon as I was scrolling through, I'm like, oh, there's a Star Trek and Star Wars toy one. I'm going to have to watch that. So you have your own big collectible. You have droid units.
Yeah. I also do collect the small little Star Wars droids as well. It's really cool. At Disney World, they have little booths where you can build your own, so... I've been collecting those, and I've actually run out of room on my shelf, so I need a bigger shelf.
So if somebody wants to start droid building, what would you recommend?
Well, the first thing I would recommend doing is we have a website. It's astromech.net, and you do have to join it to see the content, and they do that to kind of keep, like, Lucasfilm originally, and now Disney and Lucasfilm together, don't really want the plan sort of spreading around. They don't want people building droids willy-nilly. They want to keep control over it, although it's kind of a hard thing to do. So you do have to join the site. After you join the site, you should spend a long time reading through other people's builds, through their research, through what they've done, through the materials they've used, you know, trying to figure out what your skills and your strengths are, what tools you might have access to, or things you might want to learn and new skills you might want to get. So research is really the big place to start. And it'll go a long way. Once you start building, you'll probably make fewer mistakes. You'll definitely make mistakes along the way. I have a lot of spare parts now. but research is definitely the first step.
Well, I like the sound of that, because we'd like to do research here.
Yeah.
And a lot of libraries are starting to expand their makerspaces. So, you know, if you're listening, either in our library or whatever, your local library, see if they have a makerspace. You know, even if they don't have everything to make your droid, I mean, they might have a MakerBot or, you know, something, or even just computers to go on and find the plans. You know, we're all about the exchange of ideas.
Sure. And another great resource is the Long Island Makerspace that meets once a month in Plainview.
Oh, very cool.
I believe their website is limakerspace.com. Website doesn't have much on it right now, but that will link to our Facebook group and to our meetup page where you can find more info.
How long have they been around, the Long Island Makerspace?
They've been around for about 4 years. We meet in a plastics fabrication factory. So actually, it's only for people 18 and over because there is a bit of a liability issue because it is a factory.
Sure.
So mom and dad or anyone older who wants to join or come take a look around can come to one of our open houses, usually at the end of the month. But it's a great group of people. There's a lot of knowledge there. There's a lot of artists, engineers, people of that nature. And so there's great tools. There's industrial machinery and good company is what we usually say.
And you were talking a little bit in the discussion about the Little Bits droids.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of amazing toys these days as far as STEM and programming and building things are concerned. So there is like an R2-D2 Little Bits kit. I think the company is called Little Bits, I think. And it's basically you put together this little plastic R2-D2, but it has motors in it and I think lights. I haven't used one, so I'm not 100% sure. And there may also be, there's like a remote control aspect to it, but you might be able to do some programming. There's also a Sphero droid where it's already built, the Sphero R2-D2, there's a BB-8, and it's built, and you can control it with your phone. But if you get more into it, you can also do programming very similar to how you would program, say, an Arduino on the computer to make it do different things or do different motions.
That's so cool. I know during the program itself, Stacy, who was here to interview John and myself, were making a joke that we want to build one for the library called an R2 Dewey unit.
I think that's a great idea, but
you know, program it to take people to their books.
That'd be an interesting challenge.
It would be, right?
Maybe a smaller droid to fit down the stacks might be a better idea.
Yeah, I think that the traditional R2 unit might be a little wide.
Yeah, you can make a mouse droid because that's another popular group online. There's the Mouse Droid Builders. They have a big Facebook presence, and they also have their own website. And basically, they start with an RC car, and they build up the mouse droid body, and they program with all the mouse droid sounds. And so if you know what one of those are, they're also a fun thing to get into.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciated you and John taking the time to come and talk with us both on the podcast and also to the people in the library.
You're welcome. I hope it was like educational, but also inspiring. It helped to inspire people, even if you're not building a droid. You know, there's all kinds of stuff you can make if you're just creative.
I really do appreciate it once again, and I do hope that you guys will join us for SciCon 2019.
Sounds great.
All right, have a wonderful night, and we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.
To the cafe area. Thank you.
Okay, we can another one for the bloopers.